to the Voice of Force podcast for the High Republic. We're doing another book, boys. And it's not just me, Dan, your host, but it's also the co-hosts, Ed.
Hello, hello.
And Noma.
Hello there.
How are we doing today?
Yeah, we're doing. This book is...
A book. Book. It's words on a page.
It is. Well, not the way we consumed it, but you know.
Hmm. True, that is data in our ears. Ed, how about you, buddy? How you doing?
I am swell, if not little mystified, but swell.
Well, what are we covering today? What book are we covering?
Today, we are discussing the events of the High Republic series. This is phase two. We are reading The Quest for the Hidden City. We're going to tell you what happened in the book. This one was kind of happening at the same time as Convergence, so hence the back-to-back of these ones. It is, like Dan and Omar said before, it is a book. And we'll let you know. There's a few references to other things happening at the same time, so we'll go over those as well. Third book of phase two of the High Republic, so we're making inroads into the second phase now. This is 150 years before The Light of the Jedi, which is the first book of phase one, and it is set 350 years before, I guess, what everybody would know as episode one, The Phantom Menace, sort of the waning days of the Republic. But if we don't mention something that you picked up while reading this book, or there was something you wanted more clarification on, please feel free to contact us. There's many ways to do so. Noma's going to give you a few of those now. They will be in the show notes, and we will repeat them at the end of the episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, one of the easiest ways to find us is our website, and that is voiceoftheforce.com. We've also got our email, which is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. The handle for all of those is @voiceforcepod. As always, retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets does help with growing our listener base and is very much appreciated. And you can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us with 5 stars and a comment helps with visibility, and you can subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. And with that, I've also got to point out that we are on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. If you're interested in, talking with us in real time, or just kind of seeing what games and shenanigans we get up to, you can find us there. I tried to clip moments from our streams that are quite good. With that being said, I do need to go back and clip the fight against Vanala. I wonder if that's too late. Well, I'll figure out sooner or later. But yeah, we stream 3 days a week right now. The first is Tuesdays at 10 p.m. That is 10 p.m. EST, I should say. That is myself and a VTuber friend of mine, Roomba Friend, and we are currently doing an Elden Ring seamless co-op playthrough. We, as of last stream, just made it to Altus, so that's going to be fun. Going around there, I am within reach of the build I want to do now. I just need to kill Eleonora, and then I can be not Darth Maul, and that'll be really fun. But yeah, so you can join us then on Fridays at 6 p.m. EST. I am part of an ARMA group, and that is the 91st Mobile Reconnaissance Force. We are Star Wars ARMA. So if you want to see some, military simulator action in a Star Wars style, then you can join us there. I'm usually either streaming the perspective of the tank company or the Zeus, who are kind of controlling the mission for all the players. And then on Saturdays at 3 p.m. EST, it's the whole gang. So right now that is myself piloting Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord. We are definitely not Mandalorians who have been transported to a fantasy world. We're doing a little bit of that, having some fun there, right? It's got to be Star Wars somehow. And as long as I can make it happen, you know. So we'll be going through that until either we create our own kingdom or people get bored, whichever one comes first. But yeah, we'd love to have you swing by, lurk, watch, chat, whatever. As long as you don't subscribe. I don't think that we have enough stuff going on right now that validates subscribing. We've had a couple of people come by and ask about that, and I super appreciate it. But once we feel like there's enough reason to throw money at us, we'll let you know. But yeah.
Awesome. I guess every game could be a Star Wars game if you really want it to be.
You just really have to try.
What you gotta do is find a website that has mods and then just slap them onto the game.
You said that, and I'm just looking at my Steam library and being like, bro, how does Batman Arkham Knight become Star Wars?
Just risking it as, like, Vader. That would be amazing.
Interesting to see if there's mods for that one.
That would be so fun. But yeah, thank you guys. I did want to just jump into something we haven't done in a while, which is our Audible ad. If you guys haven't checked out Audible yet, I highly recommend you do so. All three of us, I believe, for this book as well, has listened to it on Audible. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Ed?
I did.
There we go. So we all listen to the audiobooks here, but they don't just have audiobooks. They have podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performance, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals like Nameless that Ed has listened to a little bit, I believe, that you won't find anywhere else. Some of my favorite audiobooks that we've covered on the podcast are the Thrawn trilogy, both of them. Both of those are just, Mark Thompson knocks it way out of the park with those ones. I gotta say, like, out of 10, those are like a 10 out of 10. Absolutely. Do you guys have any recommendations for people that haven't listened to Audible yet?
Warhammer.
Which ones?
Warhammer.
He's right, you know.
Yes.
Dan Abbott,
and any ones that you haven't recommended before? I know you're going to say Ravener.
Do you like giant... Well, actually, I was going to recommend Eisenhorn, but...
That one too.
Do you like giant robots? Do you like gianter robots? Do you like 200-meter-tall death machines that are walking cathedrals of doom and death? Then, check out Dan Abnett's Titanicus. Titans are really cool war machines in Warhammer 40K. They're basically moving small cities with guns that can glass continents if given enough time. And Titanicus is a book that is entirely, for the most part, done from the perspective of the pilots of these machines, who are wired into the machine spirits of these Titans and have to try and wrangle and wrestle their sentient machine spirits.
Very
into
cool.
line. So it's an awesome read.
Do you know the author of that one and the
Dan Abnett?
How about the narrator?
I actually don't know for that one because I've read Titanicus.
Okay.
But I do know it's on Audible because I have it and I do need to re-listen to it at some point.
Okay. Nice.
But yeah.
Good recommendation. Ed, how about you?
I've talked about the Red Rising series before, narrated by Pierce Brown. That one's a really good series. Another good series to listen to, because there's multiple books in this one, so you can get all the enjoyment out of it, is the Greatcoat series by Sebastian de Castell. The first book's called Traitor's Blade. Amazing voice work done in there by Joe Jameson. Definitely check that out. And the whole series itself will really, you get into it and then that's it, and you're in for the rest of it. I know de Castell has a new book coming out very soon, so if you do get interested in these, there's another one on the way. Might pertain to this one, might be slightly different, maybe set in the same place, but until then, yeah, I'd say that's one to check out for sure.
Awesome, thanks guys. And just a heads up, listen to it while I'm doing chores around the house, while I'm driving to and from work, and just kind of doing other things that I could listen to stuff at the same time, so you can listen to it while you're commuting, while you're cooking, exercising, gardening, or relaxing at home. And just as a fun fact, a recent Pew study found that 27% of adults say they haven't read a single book in the past year, up from 19% in 2011. And the lack of time being the main reason for that. So find your time by listening to Audible today. And you can do that by going to audibletrial.com/voiceforcepod. That's audibletrial.com/voiceforcepod for your free credit. And if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you get 2 free credits, and each credit can be used to redeem for a book. audibletrial.com/voiceforcepod. And this is going to be your spoiler warning for the episode. If you haven't read this book or listened to it, I highly recommend going back and listening to the first two, or reading the first two before reading this one, and then getting back into this book, because then you'll kind of be understanding a little bit what's going on. This can be read as a single book by itself, but there are some stuff that's mentioned in this book that kind of might be a little confusing if you haven't read the first couple. So with that said, let's get into the credits for this book.
All right. right. So, yeah, this is Star Wars The High Republic, Quest for the Hidden City. The author is George Mann. The cover artist is Nyla McGrunder. And the narrator for the audiobook is Subhadra Newton. As always, if I've mispronounced anybody's names, I do apologize for that. So we mentioned before that this is a book. Now, to be fair, it's not the book's fault.
It is a young reader.
Yeah, I spent most of the book trying to figure out if it was a like a kid's book or like a young adult book, but the fact that there's no romance in it told me it was like a kid's book. So yeah, because
you
of that...
You didn't know going into it, eh?
No, I just saw 5 hours and I said, okay, this is either a kid's book or young. Like, it's either Race to Crash Point Tower or...
That's what this is, yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of follows that same thing. The stakes are kind of low. Nothing really happens, to be completely honest. But we will fully get into it. I'm going to need to take a second to reacquaint myself, though, because... I already kind of forgot some of the things that happened, but I'll try my... Well, mostly the characters, honestly. The characters in this were, like, very kind of... There's not a lot to make them stand out. Yeah. I don't think that's the author's fault. I think it's when it's a kid's book, he's kind of...
We had Cirilla? The characters. Or no?
I think it was Salandra. Salandra Show? And then...
Yeah, Jedi Master Salandra Show.
That's yeah, right. And her Padawan is like something something Netani. Rooper? Roper? Something like that.
Rooper, yeah.
Yeah. The basic premise is that those two are sent to the planet of Gloam, and its sister planet, whose name I've already forgotten. Because there was basically the sister planet of Gloam, Abydos, sent out a distress signal asking for public aid. A Jedi team was sent there to figure out what was going on, but they lost contact with that team. And then a couple cycles later, a droid shows up in Republic space that has a distress signal from one of the... people on the Jedi team. His name's like Jedi Man or something. And basically all they know is there's something about a trap. And so they go and investigate and see what's happening. So Abydos is, and this is something that I was trying to figure out how I thought, what I thought of this. We'll talk about it afterwards, but it's the homeworld of this new alien species called the Catacoot. They're basically a species of man bats. If you know anything about Batman, well,
it's Batman Incorporated world, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Batman everywhere you look.
Yeah, like, and literal Batman. So they get there and they're like, oh, you know, they can't understand what they're saying because there's a bunch of screeches, but they think that they're not hostile. And then it turns out one of them can speak basic. So they go back to their like palace, town, city, and learn that. Basically, Gloam was a planet that they were mining from for like centuries and centuries, and they overmined it to the point where it's now just an unlivable like smog hole, basically. So they sent a message out to the Republic because it was their only source of like everything, basically. The fact that they have to abandon Gloam means that they don't have any energy sources anymore. So they are asking the Republic to specifically bring clean, renewable energy to Abydos to help them live. So, you know, that's the whole thing that's going on. The Republic team at this point is also joined by two Pathfinders who are the ones who found the message. And then there's an engineer and a doctor. And all I remember is that the doctor's Miralukin. Or sorry, not Miralukin, Moralian. And I think one of the Pathfinders is a Twi'lek.
Yeah, it's hard to visualize these characters because we only have a little bit of time with them within a 5-hour audiobook.
Yeah.
And I find that it takes me at least 3 to 4 hours to kind of get somewhat acquainted with these characters in any audiobook.
Well, and
it's like they jump around so much that it can't really establish that this is that character.
Is that there's one character with a personality and everybody else is nice.
True.
and that's basically their personality. And then Natani is trying to figure out her place in the world.
Yes, yeah.
And her place in the Jedi Order. And so that's like the only really character trait you can grab onto.
Yeah.
Again, not the book's fault. It's for kids. You give them too much, you'll overload them. So while this is all happening, there's a B plot, and it is one of the only tie-ins to the greater High Republic series. And I've already forgotten, there's a father and son who are stranded on Gloam, and we don't know where they're stranded on for the first half of the book. And then later it becomes clearer that they're on Gloam. The main character's name is Das? Or sorry, not the main character, the kid's name there. He's a 12-year-old named Das or Dad.
Das, yeah. Das. It's Das Lefbrook.
And I don't remember Spence. His dad's name. Spence, there
like
we go.
Like the most normal name out of all of them.
Right. But so they're basically stranded there. We learn later on, actually from the beginning and then in more detail later on, that they got fucked over by Sunshine Dobson. So it's like, oh.
There's your tie-in.
There's the thing. And they mention Iroh and
Leonardo DiCaprio meme. Insert that here.
And also the fact that they keep mentioning Irem and Erino like going on in the Forever War, which can I just say, like, now that we've actually already got a conclusion for it, calling it a Forever War and then immediately ending it is a little bit weird, but neither here or there. So
because the High Republic is so great, and remember, this book tells you it's setting up. Oh, we are all the Republic, didn't you know?
Except in part one, we know that they're still not all the Republic.
And they think they are.
Yeah, so they go over to Gloam, and in a nutshell, basically, there are monsters on Gloam. As the plot progresses, we come to realize that they are monsters, but they're Catacoot. And it turns out that the mineral that the Catacoot have been mining is a sentient mineral. And to which I went, oh, I see, it's lyrium. I know at least Ed will understand that. I don't think, Dan, you haven't played Dragon Age, have you?
I have not played Dragon Age, but I thought it was an interesting concept having like a mineral that's like parasitic. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And it like
It's Yoda and the rock monsters, pretty much.
Yeah, right.
Kind of, but different, yeah.
I was just waiting for a part where it starts singing to the rest of them, and I could be like, "Ooh, it is Red Lyrium. Okay, cool." But yeah, so this mineral basically takes over the Catacoot. Also, just in other BioWare like similarities, they describe how it works, and it basically like gets into their system and like crystallizes their lungs. And I was like, "Oh, so it's like the Drell in Mass Effect, where you were on a dry world, and you go to an amphibious one, and then the water just fucks your lungs and gives you Kepler's disease." But again, that's Mass Effect and Dragon Age, not Star Wars. Once they learn that, it's the one part that was pretty interesting is when the Jedi are fighting the Catacoot, like they'll slash them with their lightsabers and they don't bleed. It's just like a stream of crystal that comes out. And I was like, oh, that's neat. So they learn as well that thousands of years ago, the Catacoot came to Gloam and they started doing the mining and everything. And then they realized that the people were turning into monsters, so they sealed them up in like the bottom of the mine. And then they left, and that became like these kids' stories that I can't remember her name, but the Catacoot, who is basically like the princess of their world, is Matique? Like reeling.
Is it Minic?
Yeah, I think so. And so basically she has this revelation like, oh my god, all the legends were true. And so, you know, they are like, okay, we have to destroy them or lock them up again. But there's, and again, I don't remember his name, there's one evil Catacoot.
Is it Kiddick?
It's like Kiddick or Rillick or something like that. And he's like, no,
I think it's Rillick.
Yeah, it was I legitimately can't remember anymore.
Let me look this up.
But yeah, he's like, oh no, I gave my life mining in these mines, and I need to get money for it. And that's his entire character. That's
it's like, what are you gonna do with money, man?
Come on. Because his life is ending, like, and it's like, oh, but they could save you, but okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's
just gotta have that, you know, villain of the week kind of character.
It's just the merchants from Elden Ring at this point now.
Hey now, hey, they were persecuted, and yeah, so they made a deal with a crazy monster thing. Oh, that turns your eyes into grapes, and yeah. So, sorry. So it's Relic.
Yeah, it is Relic.
Okay. Yeah. So Relic knocks out the Miri Allen medic on the team. And then, like, almost kills the droid, and then the medic wakes up, and he realizes that, I think the droid's like GT-11 or something.
Can I just put a make a point
quick? Sure.
Also, part of the reason why it's hard for me to remember these characters, I mean, for kids, it's perfect. For me, doesn't work. Rillic, Middick, and Kiddick.
Oh, yeah, they're all super similar.
And so. I'm like, dude, you've lost me. Like, like as soon, like, I remember Middick. Because he was like the first one introduced, and it like talks about his reedy voice, and it describes him a bit more in depth, or her or him, I can't remember.
He's the king, right? So
the one that was talking basic, I think Middick.
No, that's Middick.
That's what I meant.
No, but then her dad can too, so it's weird. So
oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. But, so anyway, I just want to point that out.
That is a good point, because one of the other things that just went straight over my head is there's two droids that like bicker with each other.
Yes.
But their names are like, it's EX, and then like the second parts are different, but because they keep referring to them as EX something.
They're explorer like, droids for the Pathfinders. That's why.
Yeah, but it just kind of like blends into the same.
There's 8C and 9B.
Sure.
Which is like both of those numbers and both those letters are real close together, guys.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, so they the medic wakes up and it turns out the droid's not dead, so they do like a really quick ploy to
lure.
It was neat, right? Lure Relic in, and then the droid zaps him and knocks him out. So they collapse the mine, the Jedi collapse the mine. They also find the only member of the original team who was there. And again, I can't remember his name, but it's
the Padawan. The friend of the Padawan.
No, the Padawan dies.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's who you're talking about. No.
The actual like guy that's still alive. The one Jedi from.
He's the Jedi Master.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't remember his name either.
I'll find out.
But yeah, so basically, they find him. They hear about the tale. They realize Relic's a bad guy. But by the time they've relayed it to the Pathfinder team, they've already knocked him out, so it doesn't matter. So they collapse the mine, run out. They're fighting the crystal catacoots the whole time. And then as they're getting into the shuttle, Relic wakes up and he's like, no, I need to get off this ship because I'm a loose end. And so he does. And you can like see he's turning into one of the like evil catacoot monster things as he leaves.
Rock Baran.
Okay. Yeah.
Baran. Yeah. He's a human Jedi master.
Yeah. So yeah, all the Jedi that were with him unfortunately die. But what's it called? Natani manages to find the Padawan's lightsaber, so she gives him that at the end of the book. And then, yeah, you know, they've solved the whole mystery. They go back to Abydos, and they're having a big celebration, and that celebration actually gets interrupted because they get word that Irem and Erino have finished the Forever War, and so it's done, and peace, and yay, and so the celebration ramps up. And Natani, at the end, basically goes to Rock Baran, and says, I want to be a Pathfinder, or can you like help me, or a Wayseeker, right? For the Jedi.
Wayseeker.
Yeah, I want to be a Wayseeker. Can you like vouch for me? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. And that's basically it. So yeah, I mean, you know, obviously from what you've been hearing me say, like not a lot of the book stuck with me, but it's not meant for me.
I'm going to show you a picture of the species that we get to see in this book. I did not know this is what they look like. It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, that's why like I saw it and I was like, oh yeah, so it's man bat.
Yeah,
like, it's pure man bat.
Yeah, I looked at that. I'm like, I thought their wings were smaller because they were like not able to use them, and I'm like, no, they're it's just their entire arms. It's like, yeah, man bat. Yeah.
Like the only thing that surprised me in that photo was like, oh, they wear pants, so it's
true.
Oh, okay, that's from the fair description, I thought they were just, you know,
that's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book. It's, you
keep
know,
in mind, it's for kids, right? I guess exactly. is the way to go about this.
And that's the thing. Honestly, for me, at the end of the day, it's like, if you have kids and you want to show them some Star Wars stuff, This is perfectly good. It's perfectly inoffensive.
Has a little bit of everything in Star Wars for it, too.
It's Star Wars Scooby-Doo.
Betrayal. They have, you know, death in here. They have, like, conflict, scary things.
But, like, the lightest versions of all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like a good overall message, right? The environment is important. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's perfect. It's a perfectly good kids' book. I will give it this. As much as I was kind of, like, blasé on it, it's so much more exciting than Race to Crash Point Tower.
I liked Race to Crash Point Tower more.
I did not.
That is fair.
Yeah.
Because the whole time I was listening to Race to Crash Point Tower, I was like, get to the point.
The only thing I didn't like about Race to Crash Point Tower, which I think we covered, was that we read it. Was it first or second? There was the two books that we read.
We read it before Rising Storm.
Yeah, and we're like, what the fuck is happening? And then we read Rising Storm, we're like, oh, that's what's happening. Because we already knew what the resolution was, because that small book kind of covered it.
Yeah.
But not to the degree of what happened in the other book. And we're like, ah, okay.
But I think it's the fact that it's not connected, right? Where it was like, oh, I'm actually kind of interested in seeing where this goes, because I know it's not going to tie into an event.
And then this book ties in with the previous book, but it is on the same... I mean, in the fact that it's, like, at the same time. Because they're like, oh, the Jedi have been... Like, they've been sent to Erino and Iram. It's like, okay, we know when this book actually takes place, right? Mm. We're not like, did it happen already? Are we, like, years in the future? Like, what's happening? Kind of gave us that timeline at the very beginning. Well,
at least we know this phase is obsessed with Wayseekers at this point now.
I feel like it's more invested in the Wayseekers because it allows them to jump into characters a bit deeper. I don't know. Because if you have just like a single character by themselves, I feel like you can really have a story with that.
But what I mean is just like, you know, nobody's saying it's just like, oh, you know, you want to go to the temple, you want to take on a Padawan, anything like that. Everybody wants to know if they're ready to be one or anything like that, a Jedi or anything. That's fine. It's still about finding yourself and all that. But it seems like the answer for all of them is just like, hey, I need to figure myself out. Wayseeker. It's just like, there's other things.
I mean, we only had Wayseeker. How many Wayseekers have we had in this phase so far?
It's because I'm just saying it because they introduced the term back in phase one.
Yes.
And we had like Orla, but Orla was really the only one that we knew of.
And she bites the dust.
Pretty much. And so from there, it's just like, well, you know, we've established that these guys are things. So now we got to set up that there's a bunch of them going around doing stuff. So everybody's going to become one.
Yeah.
Like, really, we have two of them who just show up who already are. Then there's another end of like, I think I'm going to become one. Okay. And then when we were just reading Convergence, the end is like, yeah, I'll be a Wayseeker. Okay. Just like this Jedi here. Okay. I'll vouch for you when we get back.
I did like.
It just seems it's a kid's version of Convergence at this point. As well.
Yeah. The one thing I did like about this specifically, like not the Wayseeker stuff, but like kind of the information that we get in this is that the Pathfinder teams usually have Jedi that are with them or near them as like a part of the exploration teams, right? I thought that was interesting to kind of be like, okay, so in this part in time, the Jedis aren't necessarily just peace seekers.
Peacekeepers,
thank you. They're more peacekeepers, but also protectors of the explorers a little bit, right? Because the explorers, like, they have to, like, set out certain beacons and stuff for communication to be relayed between places. Because, these planets that they're going to, they don't have a lot of communication coming back unless it's relayed through the droids, which is what we saw kind of at the beginning. Yeah. Which is interesting. I thought it was a very... It definitely puts a little bit more... weight onto the table, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, of like, if you get screwed on this planet like these two Jedi did, they didn't realize that, you know, anything happened until they didn't come back for a while, and then these two Jedi get sent out, and it's like, well, what happened? And they have to talk to these people and figure it out, right?
It feels like such a strange vibe to me, and it's probably just, or not just, it's probably because I've been into Legends for so long.
Yeah.
But like I almost really want to see how much of the galaxy's been discovered at this point, because there's such a weird
and they're new planets.
Well, and that's the thing that weirds me out, because it's like, okay, so we know now that like at this point the Twi'leks are like new-ish because we got from I can't remember if it was Convergence. No, it wasn't Convergence. It was the second book. No, it was Convergence, because the first one's Path of Deceit, right?
Path of Deceit.
So we learn from Convergence that the Twi'leks are, like, relatively new, which is, like, crazy to me. And then in Light of the Jedi, we learn that, like...
Oh, that was the Togrutans.
No, the Togrutans is...
No, you're right. Sorry,
you're thinking of the stories of the Jedi or whatever.
I was thinking of the High Republic stuff, where the Togrutans.
Yeah, well, because that's the whole thing the beginning of Light of the Jedi is like, oh, you know, the Togrutan, we've just made contact with them. It's like, really now? And it's so weird to me to be like, oh yeah, and then 200 years later, we've got the entire galaxy figured out, and half the galaxy figured out, and we're at the Old Republic, and blah blah blah. And it's like I'm used to everything being connected after the hyperspace wars, and then just being like thousands of years away. So it's so jarring.
You have to kind of split your mind a bit.
Well, but then at the same time, that's the one thing that really bugged me in this book, is it's like, oh, the Kataku, they're a new alien species, and I'm like, then why have we never seen them after this? Like, they just exist now, and that's it.
Could be that there's a planet killing device that happens, as it does in all Star Wars eras, that destroys but these planets, maybe?
Most of the time, even if a planet is destroyed, keeps going on, right? Yeah. The destruction of Alderaan did not spell the end of all Alderaanians.
That's true.
Right? The destruction of Hosnian Prime did not spell the end for all Hosnian Primers, right? Like,
we don't necessarily know that.
No, well, Resistance.
Well, that was the dad, but we don't know if he was actually from...
But the son.
Right? But we don't know if they're from Hosnian Prime, is my point.
I mean, if you're the senator for
the senator,
I mean, come on now.
I don't know if he was the senator of Hosnian Prime or he was a senator on Hosnian Prime. I can't remember.
He's the senator for Hosnian
Prime. Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, so that's the thing. It's like, introducing a new species now isn't bad on one hand, because it's like, you know, it's neat at least that we're expanding on stuff, but on the other hand, it's like, well, then where have they been this whole time?
Exactly. Like, make it make sense. Like, don't just say you're doing something new for the sake of doing something new, because now you have a loose end that you got to tie up and explain. Or very well not to, but then when the questions come up of, like, where were they during the Clone Wars? Where were they during everything? Where were they during everything else? You can't answer it, especially because now they're known of, so they should be in a record somewhere.
You'd think so. Why not?
Yeah. And that's what happens going forward is, like, you know, IRM and Irino. It's like, yeah, these are neat planets. They're slightly cliche, but then again, you know, I don't think you can point to a single Star Wars planet that isn't a little bit cliche.
I think it's weird that we're getting new planets, and they're like, yeah, we haven't discovered not that we haven't discovered these, but we haven't, like, made contact with these planets or whatever, right?
Well, especially when books show you hyperspace lanes and everything, right? Yeah. And you say something like Irem and Arano are so, like, dependent on the Dalman sector or whatever. Yeah. And then it's just like, okay, so again, it still comes up as the, what are you doing?
Because, like Ed said, now my question is, cool, were they on the Republic side or the Confederacy side? Were they on the Empire side, or did they rebel against them?
Or were they there at all? Like, that's it.
Yeah, but you can't just keep blowing up planets.
I mean, it happened in Legends.
Point. Yes, after the Death Star.
No, before. Didn't they have, like...
Pre-Death Star, you've got, like, the Thought Bomb. That didn't destroy a planet, that just killed everybody on it.
I can't remember what it's called.
The landscape, but the planet was still there. Like, Busan's still there.
The only other one I can think of is the one from the Clone Wars, but that also just... the Clone Wars GameCube game. I can't remember what it was called. It was something that, like, Ulic Kheldroma found that was, like, this big flying saucer that just, like, eats souls.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Or something. Yeah, it's
a GameCube game.
It's so weird because it's a GameCube game where you're playing as the Jedi Knights, but you're always in a vehicle. It's a very strange... But anyways.
It's really weird.
Yeah, but I loved it growing up. But anyways, like, in that one, it was the same thing. Like, most of the Doomsday devices leading
up to... No, it's just a thought if we don't ever hear them again, right?
No, that's the thing, right? Like, even in Legends, up until the Death Star is invented, as far as I can remember, most of the Doomsday weapons just kill everyone on a planet.
Because
same thing with Naga Sadao's kind of bullshit, but that was like Yavin, right? And that's a whole other thing. But it's just, you know, like just falling back on a trope too many times. Well, it's like Star Wars Episode 9, right? One Death Star is cool. A fleet of Star Destroyers with planet killing guns is stupid. it's got to be moderation. Same thing in Warhammer 40K, right? You've got Exterminatus weapons. You've got weapons capable of blowing up a planet.
Suncrusher, is that one?
Suncrusher is Legends. So it's after it's after Episode 6. Suncrusher is stupid.
Galaxy Gun? I'm just looking up ones. Yeah,
yeah. Galaxy Gun is also post-Episode 6.
Okay, interesting.
Galaxy Gun isn't even the Empire. The Galaxy Gun is the Hutt Cartel.
No. This doesn't make sense. It says the Final Order fleet is the canon one is a planet killer. They never left orbit.
Yeah, but they said they were like each of the gunny Death Star.
That's so funny.
So I've been reading the Vader series, right?
Yeah. And the new one or the old one?
The new one.
Oh, okay.
And so 2020. Pretty much Palpatine shows Vader Exegol.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I remember that.
And he's like, yeah, see each of these ships right here, each of these, they're going to have Death Star laser on them. So
yeah, there's a lot of sequel trilogy stuff in those.
You see the fleet and it's just like, okay, so like, what, you're going to wipe out a whole half of the galaxy?
Why didn't we build these in the galaxy?
What the hell are you going to rule over then? Like, if you had told me that he's doing all this because, like, Yuuzhan Vong and invasion or something like that, I'd be like, okay, but why do you need, they're invading, why do you need to blow up your own planets?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't even, the more you think about it, the less it makes sense, because if it's like, oh, well, each fleet will have one of these, and it's like, cool, so what happens if the New Republic steals one?
Yeah, they'll blow
you up. Well, they can't, except for all the times they've already done it.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah. Anyway, coming back to this book, guys.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I said, the Catechists was my biggest complaint.
The species in general, and like not being mentioned before, or like
just the whole thing of that, right? Yeah. Where it's like you're free to bring in a new race, but it, like, understand it will generate questions. And granted, again, it's a kid's book. This is not like, you know, there's a line I feel for me between like being like, oh no, the Catechists are stupid because they're new, and being like, yeah, no, the Moaning Mountain is fine because that's also a new alien species on the Ewok planet, but nobody cares. But they're both kids' books, and so it's like, so which one's which? So again, at the end of the day, this isn't going to be like, no, this book sucks because of the Catechists, but it is just something that stuck with me.
How about you, Ed? What do you think?
Yeah.
No, my thoughts are relatively similar to No Man's Land this time.
Yeah. Just,
I went into it on the offhand knowing that it was a kid's book, so my interest was already not...
You and me both.
it was just like, okay, let's just hear what you got to say. And it went over the... What I like about it is it went over the normal Star Wars tropes, I guess if you want to call them, especially for kids. So, you know, working together, you know, Republic is good and good guys, bad guys, were clearly laid out with their one-dimensional plans, and hope was the biggest thing, because you see, like, you know, what do you want to make of yourself? You'll figure it out. What, you know, how can you solve problems, work together with your friends, even if they are, like Noma said, just a kind all the time. But that to me spoke to like what a child's interpretation of a Jedi is supposed to be.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it's just like, I'm trying to find the right phrase for it. It's scaled down, pretty much. It's a scaled down Convergence. I just had a lot more fun with Convergence towards the end, and I thought it would be similar with this one. But throughout the whole thing, I was just like, okay, it's done. Yay. Kind of thing. It's not one I'll go back to because there's no reason to.
Yeah.
Really? Like, it was just, okay, for phase two, let's see if we can get through everything.
It was
one of those, really.
I'm pretty sure that we get these characters back in the quest for Planet X.
Maybe, because that's the next kids ones, right?
It is. It's a little bit later, but it is, I think, done by George Mann as well, I believe.
I would like to see some of these characters eventually show up in one of like the
older we had with the phase books. One, right? Where like they kind of came in out. In and out of the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, like different quality books, yeah.
Have them in there. See, if especially if you want to take Salandra or something like that, and make sure her and her Padawan would, like, okay. Well, actually, shit. No, you can't, can you? Her, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know if I want to know any more about these characters. Just leave them in the kids ones.
I think if we get them in another book that's like non-kids book.
Or the comic series with Yoda. Stuff like that. Because we did see growth there.
Yeah.
From the last ones we read in Phase 1. So.
True. True. I don't know. Yeah, it was kind of a meh. I think for all of us. There were some points where like even I was like just tapped out. I think I had to re-listen to like 3 or 4 parts of this thing. Like 3 or 4 times, because I'd be listening and then like 30 minutes would go by and I'm like, I didn't pick up any of that. I was my brain just like put it to the back, and it normally doesn't happen when I listen to podcasts or audiobooks, but for this one it was just like I'm not invested whatsoever, even at the end. Like I think my brain really tapped out right after Rilik was like taken down in the ship. And then I'm like, oh, that was really cool. And then I was like, okay, next thing. And then I come back and like, we're in the hidden city. I'm like, what the hell happened? How did you get here? What happened? Like, we found the other Jedi. I'm like, whoa. I got to rewind here. What happened?
Honestly, this isn't a dig at Audible at all. I just feel like this is one where, because it's good book, the way the narration is, it almost feels like if it's baby talking to you a little bit, like very, it's being very simplified. At least I found it that way.
Like the words being spoken?
Yes.
Yeah, so like the writing itself.
The writing is supposed to be simple for them to pick up and understand. If like a kid was listening to this, they'd probably enjoy it. For everyone, I say actually get a physical or digital copy and read it.
Yeah, maybe that would be faster.
Everything like that. You'd probably zoom through it at that point.
You probably get it done within like an hour or two.
It's only 300 something pages, I think.
Is it that long?
Yeah. Wow. Remember, these productions, they gotta talk and they go slower, whether or not you speed it up or not.
Interesting. I didn't know it was that long. So
it's tiny-ish by book standards, but like that could be bigger prints, anything else like that. I'm not sure at that point.
Okay.
But
I mean, yeah, like it's definitely a fun read for kids. Absolutely. I think this definitely is not going to rank so high for us, but if we keep in mind that it's for kids, I feel like we could kind of give it a fair shake for kids.
You put an asterisk with it.
I think that's kind of what we need to do with these ones. I would say the narrator did a decent job with the narration. I had no problems with her narration for like different character voices. All of them were, I would say in my mind, distinct enough. I think it was just the descriptions and the time that we spent with the characters that wouldn't allow me to really bond with them, I guess, and understand them. But yeah, I don't know. Any last thoughts, guys?
Let's get to Cataclysm. Yeah.
We're coming. Alrighty. Let's get into the rankings. Welcome to the rankings of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. It is a shorter one, but we're going to get into our rankings quick and then get on with the outro. So let's start it off with Ed.
All right. So I've decided to give 2 rankings in terms of, hey, what do I think of this? It's just normal read. 5, neutral, middle of the pack, no hate on any side. But then I'm going to put a slash here because for a kid's book, I'm going to give it 7.
There you go.
And let's put the asterisk there just to be safe.
That's a good idea. Putting 2 rankings there might be definitely worth it. It'll be interesting to see once we're done the High Republic in general. What we can do is we can take all of Phase 1 and then get the average score. All of Phase 2, get the average score. And all of Phase 3 and get the average score. And then average all of them and just see, like, relatively, how was the story overall? We haven't done that yet. Yeah. And I think the only one we could really do that with that we've completed is the Thrawn trilogies. And we know that's near a 10 anyway. So it's not really worth doing.
Biased numbers. Yeah. I don't need to put an asterisk. It's the only one that'll have a slash. Well, this one and the other one.
So, I think that's fair. That's a fair shake. How about you, Noma?
Very similar, ironically. If we're judging it as... if we're judging it on the same plane as every other Star Wars book, then it's a 4. If we're judging it just as a kid's book, it's like I was really hovering between 6 and 7, but I think it's a 6.
Okay.
If I was like 8, I would definitely enjoy it and like want to read it a bunch. But also take that with a grain of salt, because as I've mentioned before, I got it, I at 12 read a bunch of things I really shouldn't have. So my own view on what is appropriate reading acceptable for that age is very skewed. You know, the JoJo's and Berserk is not preteen material, but oops. But yeah, that's basically what I'm sitting at.
Sounds good. I'm kind of in league with both of your rankings, actually. I did a 4 and a 7 for this one. Four being like, yeah, honestly, not as good as Path of Deceit. And Path of Deceit was already eh. And this one really didn't have any sustenance to it as far as I could tell at this point in the phase. So for as like an adult reader coming into this book, it's a skip, honestly. I wouldn't recommend it. And then for kids, I would say it's a 7. Yeah, like...
You know what? Oh, no, keep going.
I was going to say 7. I mean, if I was thinking back to Dan when he read some of the Star Wars books when he was a kid, when you pick up that book and you're like, oh, what are these? Who are these Jedi? Who are the things? What's going to happen? Like getting introduced to tropes, storytelling tropes and stuff in those younger books is perfect, right? Like we get all the Star Wars stuff in this one, which is really cool. We get like a the heel turn with the one character, Rilek, right? You don't understand that. I mean... I as soon as they're like, yeah, he had a pretty bad cough, I'm like, I feel like this guy is not going to be a good person and something's going to happen here. But I mean, as a kid, you probably don't realize that because this is probably the first time you're seeing these tropes in a book. So it's a really good introduction to that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think it kind of pulls the curiosity of the kid into Star Wars a bit more to kind of open up their ideas and their eyes to other things that could happen in Star Wars. So, yeah. No, you're going to say something?
Yeah, no, it was just I was looking at some of the other ratings that I've given for High Republic stuff, and I saw Fallen Star.
Yes.
And I saw that I gave it the exact same, and I 100% agree with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
I hate Fallen Star.
It was all right. It was all right.
You like the Spider-Man moment, though, no?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I'm super biased because the two reasons I hate it are because Orla and Orbelin are both
your favorite characters
fucking axed in that book.
Yeah.
And also, what the hell was even the point of Starlight if it just doesn't even...
doesn't exist at the end of it.
And like six people and they're booted up.
It was a great work.
It was one of, yes, many great works.
Yeah. So, no, in that sense, I don't... I don't regret anything with that rating. But the other thing that I was going to say, too, was just speaking of, like, kids' books back in the day, I think something that was, and they definitely did it for monetary purposes back then, but something that really helped with the kids' books back in the day were that they were series, because that was what was popular back then, right? Was you wouldn't just release a book with a bunch of characters and then stop there. You'd release like 16 books. I can't remember any of them, but I know a friend of mine had one where it was like these two kids and like every book they would like be transported on this like flying
carpet. Oh yeah, Magic Treehouse. Like, I love that shit.
Yeah.
That's the best series. I love that as a kid. Absolutely.
I never read a single book, but my buddy had all of them.
Yeah. So. Oh, I had all of them too. Well, I read them a lot in like the libraries and stuff. Gotcha, and gotcha. Like I remember getting like the Christmas special one where it was like a hardcover. And you're like, dude, this is the best. And it's like these cool little adventures that are very much like these. You are correct. Yeah.
But the Tintin series too, man.
Sorry?
Ooh, yeah. Well, Tintin. Which Tintin?
Tintin, yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Not that 3D thing they did. But
oh,
like,
no, I mean, the original Tintin books are a little bit spicy.
How so, Noma?
I mean, you don't want to know about the Blue Dragon. That one's kind of...
but I mean, you look at any... Because Asterisk was also around that time, and it's also just...
Asterisk and Obelisk? Obelix? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
The,
and
it's the also, Viking pirates?
Yeah, it's also a little bit racy, to put it lightly. But yeah, no, but like, I know what Ed means. Like, the Tintin stuff that was coming out around...
Where it's like episodic books.
We kids. Yeah, that was all super... And, you know,
the Hardy Boys for that. There's like series like that, yeah.
And it's, yeah, all that Breakfast kind of stuff. So, Yeah, and so, like, for Star Wars, with that, you had the Young Jedi Knight series, and you had Jedi Apprentice, and then Jedi Learner? I don't remember what the one with Obi-Wan and Anakin was called.
You felt like you were growing with them.
Yeah, exactly. The series. And that's why funny. I'm in the corner freaking out during Brotherhood, because they mention Siri Tachi again. I'm like, let's fucking go!
Yeah.
Is she still wearing the pilot suit? Yeah!
That's where you're like, they remember!
Yeah, no, 100%. It's fucking, it's my childhood. Yeah, no, huge props to Mike Chen, because that's why me and Brian were both just like, oh my god, yeah, Jedi Apprentice was so fucking cool. Did you know Qui-Gon's not a great Jedi Knight, at least when he's teaching apprentices?
Yeah.
Because he keeps fucking failing with them. But that doesn't mean he's not cool. It just means that, you know, he's more of a tragic figure. Yeah.
Man.
It's an interesting evolution of the changes of that kind of episodic series thing to now more of like one-off kind of things.
Absolutely.
See, this is why it lends credence to the fact that you don't, when you hear about scrapping legends, it's just like, you don't think they actually look through the sequence of it more. So it's just wanting to put their own stamp on stuff. And so now when releasing looks like these and everybody's just like, oh, I wish it was like this. You could see them being there like, what the hell do they mean? And it's just like, well, if you go back and look, like, everything's a series. Mm-hmm. What you're trying to do here is combine everything into one mega series, and you're trying to Avengers it. When it doesn't work like that, each of them are their own little series that will sometimes have crossover events.
I think you could do it well. And I think the comic series, not of the High Republic, but just in general, when they like first started the comic series, I think that's where they did it well. Like, they did the Star Wars series and the Darth Vader series, and then they merged them together in other series, and then they kind of weaved in and out of their own thing. But they were kind of following the same timeline, and then they converged and they came out, right?
There's an interesting, like, philosophical edge to it that you can go into as well, which I wasn't expecting to go over in a kid's book, but, you know, here we are. And that's that, like, while the Star Wars comics did have a lot of good plot lines to them, The thing that made the Marvel movie so successful was that you have 30 years worth of plot lines that you can take for any of the characters. And at that point, you look at any Marvel superhero, and they've got at least one, I'd say for 90% of them, at least two good storylines. And so that is immediately two good movies. The reason why the first two Thor movies didn't do super well is because they're not based off of any plot lines. They're just
original content.
Put together, tried to put in the universe, but they didn't really have a grounding to it.
I think this is a thing that's like, I think sometimes we forget that the people who are writing these books are fans of Star Wars. Sometimes, most times. I don't think you'd be hired as a Star Wars author if you weren't a fan of Star Wars, really. Because you kind of have to know a little bit about it. But maybe there are some authors that are like Mike Chen, where you have a really solid understanding of certain characters, certain stories, that you can bring these characters in. And like, that is where you see the difference between a George Mann book for kids and Brotherhood by Mike Chen. And it's not because, you know, the content you're focusing on is very different. Established characters, brand new characters, right?
I think in that case it's how you view it, right? Because I think there's writers who can go, oh yeah, it's Star Wars, I know how to do a Star Wars, and this will be easy. And then there's some people who are like, oh yeah, I get to work on Star Wars.
Yes.
Oh, I've had so many ideas that I get to put down.
Yeah.
Because to that same kind of point, right, like, while the Thor movies are kind of okay, something that blew my mind when I first saw it was that Spider-Man Homecoming is a original story.
Oh wow.
It's not like, Ned's not even supposed to be Spider-Man's friend. He's Miles Morales's friend.
Oh wow.
We've combined those two because Miles Morales isn't in it yet, and they've done a completely new story, and they've reinvented the Vulture. Vulture's backstory, it was like, oh my god, you made me care about the Vulture. I have never in my life been like, yeah, no, the guy with the green suit and the wings.
Yeah.
An old man and with neck scruff. He's cool.
He's crazy. Yeah.
No, never. But like that, I was like, holy shit, I can get behind the Vulture now. And so I think it's a lot more like that, right? Where you have people who everybody knows Star Wars, and if you're working on Star Wars, yeah, to a degree, you like it. But I think there's a big difference in people who go, yeah, it's Star Wars, I know this, and being like, oh, I can't wait to pull all this stuff in.
That I've been thinking about since I was a kid or a teenager, yeah.
Because not to, like, dump on him too much, but you look at, like, J.J. Abrams' Star Wars work compared to, like, Dave Filoni's, right?
Or even J.J. Abrams and Dave Filoni, and you can even add in Robert Rodriguez, who did the Boba Fett series. Right, a big part of that was him saying, I used to play with like Star Wars action figures as a kid and make up stories in my head and all this stuff. And then,
yeah, I feel like that actually damages it a little bit though because of Book of Boba Fett.
That's what I mean though. Like, that's what I mean though. Like, that's what I'm trying to say is like, it doesn't always have a one for one, right? And so,
oh yeah, nothing is ever black or white,
right? And so, like, that's where it's like there's a gray area where it can be kind of both worlds, which is weird, but. I mean, to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, and no series is without it. If anyone was ever interested, I can go off for like an hour and a half about the worst writer for Warhammer 40K in existence.
Maybe during our next April Fool's special.
Yeah, maybe. I'll just be sitting here screaming CSGO at the top of my lungs.
Yep.
The Terminators can do backflips. They what?
Wait, what?
Anyways. Yeah, no, a 5-ton tactical dreadnought armor does a fucking backflip, and it's like
dexterity, bro.
No,
it's servo motors. No,
no.
Yeah. Any last points, guys, before we get into the outro? All right. Welcome to the outro of the podcast. Thank you again so much for listening. We're going to get into how you can contact us about this book or previous books or anything Star Wars related. If you want to talk to us about the stream, feel free to do that here as well. If you have any questions about maybe some characters or notice something that we didn't, there are ways to get a hold of us, and Ed is going to let you know how to do that.
All this information you can find over at voiceoftheforce.com. If you want to contact us by email, that is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. We are at Voice Force Pod on all of those. Retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets does help with growing the listener base and is appreciated. Things like anything else we post or retweet from somebody else, feel free for that as well. Please listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. If you leave a five-star comment, you can definitely do that, and a five-star review as well. It will help with visibility, so the next person you tell about us will have that much of an easier time finding us. And please subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. You will get that information on whatever platform you choose to listen to us on, whether that be Spotify or Apple Music. I'm sorry, Amazon Music. We are also on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/voicecoursegaming. We stream Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Tuesdays from 10 to 12 p.m. 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. EST. On Fridays, we are at 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. EST. And on Saturdays, we are at 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. EST.
All right. Thank you, guys. And remember, if you have the rock parasite within you, you cannot be cured. You must make money before you die.